What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Alpine Worlds podcast, the Four Season Mountain Show. I'm Matthias, and obviously I'm here with my brother Jakob again.
As always, yeah, we are very sorry that we didn't record any podcast in the last weeks. It was a busy time. We were out there trying to ski the sickest lines in our backyard, as the winter currently is super good here. But yeah, now we are back, and now we're going to talk about episode 5, about compression tests, cornices, ski cuts, ropes involved into accessing lines and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, especially on how we deal with risks, and also about one line which we actually scored, which was one of the sickest lines ever.
Which we want to do again.
Exactly.
Faster.
It's not done yet. I think the line we want to talk about is the line from Alpine Worlds episode 5, the last episode which released on our YouTube channel, and I'd say it was a really special one.
All right, 3, 2, 1, drop in.
Welcome back to episode 4 of the Alpine Worlds podcast, the Four Season Mountain Show. It's been a while. We have been out there treading quite hard. Yeah, but now we are back and I'm sure we're going to do a few more episodes the next day. So much stuff happened.
Yeah, we are very sorry that we didn't record any more podcasts in the last weeks. But as Matthias already said, we were super busy trying to ride the sickest lines in our backyard as the winter is super good at the moment. And yeah, today we're going to talk about episode 5, about compression tests, about rope techniques, cornices, all that stuff, which pretty much aligns with episode 5.
That's what we did. We tried to ski some amazing lines, and at least I'm pretty sure we managed to ski one super sick line, and that is that's a Bru North Face, which we filmed in episode 5. And I think, yeah, to be honest, it was probably my highlight of the winter so far.
Yeah, I think it was the most intense action we did, and it was also, yeah, probably also the most beautiful one with the sunrise.
And for sure, the biggest mission I've ever been involved while filming. Let's start from the beginning. We have been filming in the Dolomites for 3 days in a row for our new movie, The Red Face Zone, with Mario, with Marco Tribi, and also with Julian Strauss, the FPV pilot. And yeah, conditions were insane. And it was snowing a lot just before that. So we thought, yeah, we're going to take some time and let it settle for the big mountains. And yeah, then straight after these 3 days of filming in the Dolomites, which were already pretty intense. We talked about it in the last podcast, Alpine Worlds YouTube episode 4. Yeah, we had like a day of resetting, really, just unpacking, charging stuff, repacking. And we went straight to Sulen. And we had that idea in our minds to ski the north face of Zebru, or really of Hochjoch. Yeah, we skied it once last year.
You skied it once last year.
True, I skied it once last year. There is like this one couloir which goes up to the bivvy, and we wanted to ski that. We approached it, and then already on the way there, we saw our mate Gaza, and we went up to the top and approached from the top, and he came from a lower position, and then we really met up at the start of the couloir.
Yeah, so basically there is like a couloir which goes slightly left of the bivouac, and then there is the face which pretty much starts right at the bivouac. And our idea so far was always to climb up the couloir and then go to the bivouac. I mean, the couloir is amazing. So I skied the couloir together with the other boys the first time we were there with Gaza and Matthias. I think you were the last one.
Yeah, the thing is like we, you know, obviously it's a couloir, so it's pretty bad if there's many people. So yeah, at the bottom of the couloir, it's been us two, and they were in three. So we're like, yeah, we might as well just team up, you know, we are all here, and why making it a race or making it a competition or something, who gets the first track. So we just teamed up. We went up there, and then we were on top, and yeah, we did rock, paper, scissors, all 5 of us, and I was the last one.
I think Gaza won. I got second, Then there was it Fabio already?
Fabio, yeah.
Fabio, and you got last. And I remember we were already thinking about that phase, but nobody really knew if there is even an exit or if it's even skiable and stuff like that. So nobody really wanted to do. But then, yeah, you came last, and then you just said, "Okay, boys, I'm gonna go to the bivouac and do the phase." And I was like, "Oh shit!" Like,
but you know, like you climb up a couloir for really hours and hours. It looks so close, but it's so far. It's like 1,000 vertical meter couloir, one of the really biggest ones I've ever been to. And you go up there, you boot back forever for then dropping in last, you know, as a fifth one. I was like, sort of, oh fuck, yeah. that's not ideal. So I was like, oh, what am I gonna do? I don't know. Fuck it. It's probably why I lost. So I took the opportunity and said, yeah. I just go to the bivy and have a look at the face. I only said I'm gonna have a look at the face.
Yeah, that's true. Too. Yeah. But I already pretty much knew that you're gonna ride it, because I mean, when you climb up to the bivouac, you stand on top. The face looks good from up there. You just don't know if it finishes like not in a cliff. But yeah, to wrap this side story up, Matthias at the end wrote the line, which worked pretty good. I think he went kind of like safe, slow, but I mean, you didn't know the phase. Rewrote the couloir, was amazing. And then we just said, oh, we need to go back. We need to write the phase which Matthias wrote, because it's amazing. And we should go up to the bivouac, sleep there, and then drop in for sunrise. And yeah, as Matthias said, after we were in the Dolomites, we saw the opportunity to ride this phase. And there was this one day off between. We were all super tired, but there were only two good weather days left, I think. And so we decided to go for it. And we packed everything, sleeping bags, food, cooker. It was so much gear.
And I remember we had like pretty big struggles with filmers. Like we had David Gamper, the guy we mostly film with. And then we really tried to find someone. And David Falk from E3 Productions, which helps us with the podcast and also the YouTube. And it was those two boys. So we were sort of settled, because Mario Capelli, our number one drone pilot, had this other shoot for Bergwelten.
Yeah, in Slovenia.
So yeah, Mario is crazy. Like in the Dolomites, we every day started before sunrise, so I guess like at 5 or at 6, 3 days in a row. And then the last day we said again, yeah, let's start at 6. And Mario was like, do you guys mind if I go to the summit for sunrise?
Make some shots there. And we were like,
well, I don't mind. You can do that. So and already before this Dolomite thing, he has been like going so hard for, I guess, weeks, really. Like,
yeah,
no,
he's
rest
a beast. He's a workaholic guy, I would say.
Yeah, he loves it.
So fit and so motivated.
Well organized. He doesn't need much sleep. He only sleeps like 4 hours a day, I guess.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then after this Dolomite shooting, we were finished at, I think, 5, after a super long day again. He went straight to Slovenia for this shoot, like 6 hours or 5 hours of driving. And then it turns out that the snow there wasn't great. So yeah, in the evening we said, like, he called us and was like, oh yeah, guys, so what are you doing? We're like, yeah, we do this, this, and this. And yeah, so sad that you can't be here and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, well, the snow is so bad. So yeah, he sent it straight from Slovenia. That is like, how many hours of driving? Like 8?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of driving. And the thing was, we already had our filmers. And we said, yeah, Mario, actually, we already have David. We have like the two Davids. We are pretty much fine. And he was like, yeah, guys, if you don't mind, I'm so stoked for that mission. I would really like to come. And we said, okay, yeah, let's go. I mean, you make so nice drone shots.
I mean, what's better than having a super motivated guy?
And at the end, it really paid off. I mean, Mario was so fit. He even sat track in the couloir, I guess, at the, like, not all the couloir, obviously, but I think the last 200 meters, he was really setting track, and he did a good job, and everything was sick. But then when we arrived at the bivouac, he was kind of fucked up.
Breaking.
I remember we were up there. Everyone was super tired, and Mario was like, okay, guys, I'm very sorry, but I'm not going to do anything now. I'm just going to go in the bed and chill. And like we cooked and we prepared everything, but because he was like super.
I mean, we have been cooking and eating, and he was, I think, so destroyed and tired that he couldn't even like care about that. Yeah. Like he wasn't really eating and yeah, just really passed out. But I mean, you know, like 2 weeks of full on like mountain missions, then 3 days of filming full on and 1 day of TV shooting. A lot of driving.
I could never do that. That's crazy.
Impossible.
Like for me, impossible. I always need some break between the missions and everything. Like he just goes for it. It's crazy. Just
keeps going. Yeah,
maybe it comes with the age.
I think so. Because also Aaron, he like, to me, seems like he keeps getting more and more
restless.
Yeah, yeah. Needy to do something.
Yeah.
I sort of need, like, after like three days of big missions and filming, I sort of need at least a full day of just, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. We will see. Now I'm 25. Maybe in 10 years, 35, I'm also as restless as Mario Capelli. Yeah. We'll see. But yeah, for the moment, it would be impossible for me to do all that stuff.
Yeah, so the mission in general was pretty tough, like having all the baby stuff and super, like pretty heavy backpacks. It was cold. It was midwinter. Plus having like, you know, this huge mission ahead of us with sort of like really committing line midwinter. So also avalanche dangers and stuff.
I was super frustrated about the heavy backpacks. I hate it. Like I'm always kind of performance orientated on the descent. And if I have such a heavy backpack, I just don't feel it. I just feel I could not jump a cliff or something. And so, yeah, but what should we do? I mean, we didn't know how the BV was, if there was stuff to like, I mean, now after we were up there, I think you could sleep without a sleeping bag there.
Yes and no. Like the thing is, maybe you could. But, you know, there is some blankets and stuff, but those blankets were really slippery. So they kept falling off. And then also, you know, you're super tired. You're sort of sweaty and wet. Obviously, we had a lot of changing clothes and stuff, but still, like, you wanna have a good rest up there.
Yeah, I mean, we were very well prepared for the night. And I think we could have saved a lot of weight. But without knowing how the BV was, it was the best decision, because if there would have been no blankets without a sleeping bag, it was so cold. I remember during the night, I woke up and I went out for a piss and like the piss immediately froze, immediately, like after half a second. And I think it was minus 20 degrees with super strong winds during the night. So yeah. It was really cold. But I think now in spring, we might go again. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we go without sleeping bags. I mean, at least me.
Yeah. But I mean, you don't save that much weight with a sleeping bag. It weighs less than a kg. It's about light sleeping bags.
But the volume of the sleeping bag also makes a difference, because then the backpack gets like big. And then if you turn, it's shaky. I don't know. We will see. But I mean, yeah. How was the mission?
let's go from the start.
Yeah.
So we went to Sulden in the morning, started approaching the line. It was amazing powder down at the glaciers. And again, it took us so long to just approach. It looks so close, but the fact that you have so many huge mountains around makes everything look way smaller than it is. And already like getting there over the glaciers took us like 3 hours.
Yeah,
heavy backpacks and everything. You know, we did some filming and it was cold. And so we came to the start of the line. And it looks pretty close. You know, you look up there and you're like, yeah, maybe like 1.5 or 2 hours we are up there.
The snow, as you said, it was really good. And we were like expecting the best conditions. Then we came to the couloir. While we were approaching the couloir, the wind got really strong. And it started to have like a lot of spin drift. And I think the spin drift there destroyed pretty much the snow.
Yeah, the thing is, it's obviously north facing and there picked up quite a lot of south or west wind. So yeah, it pressed over the ridge and it really blew down some snow. It's like some huge walls above yeah. there. And it was like a consistent spin rift down the couloir. So once we approached the couloir, we saw that it's actually sort of hard-packed.
I remember the spin rift got so big sometimes that it was close to an avalanche. And we were pretty much talking about turning around because it was too dangerous. Like, it seemed to be too dangerous, but then we were like waiting a little bit and like looking at the situation in general. And then we figured out that most of the slough is coming down already like 200 meters above us from the side. So we kind of understood that if we go farther up, that it will get less and less. And so, yeah, we took the decision to go like kind of fast up this 200 meters and then look how much spindrift there is left. But in the moment we were down at the bottom, I think I was in a situation I said like, probably going to turn around.
It's yeah, me crazy. Too. Like, it was really an on-edge decision. And I remember we talked a lot with Mario. I mean, he's really experienced as well. And like, our main objective is obviously to stay safe, but even more than that, to keep our filmers safe. Yeah. Because that would be the worst nightmare ever if somebody gets hurt because of your decision. So we really, try to like involve everyone with the decision taking. And we observed quite a while this spindrift situation. And the other thing is, like, at the bottom of the line, there was an open, quite gnarly Bergschrund where most of the spindrift fit into. It wasn't like a thing where we would just slide down, but you had a decent chance that you would even finish up in the Bergschrund.
And at that moment, we didn't know how deep it was.
Exactly.
After the mission, I went there and it went down so far. I mean, all the snow appeared somewhere. Like, it looked like it was 20 meters deep, but then I saw the spindrift just going through, and I don't know how deep it was, but for sure, like, falling into would be crucial.
Like, thinking back at it, the feeling there was really intense. Like, it was really, really strong, you know, you're in there. Yeah. The spindrift came in phases. It was always spindrift, but then there was also like bigger things coming down, and it was just rough, you know, like so much snow flying everywhere and so steep and cold and big. And I felt really
scared. I felt like I'm on the wrong spot at the wrong time. So I was really like asking myself, dude, what the fuck are you doing here? Yeah. Like, that's not normal. Like, there is so strong winds, there is spin rift. You have cold, everyone is already super tired. Do you really want to go up to the BV now? Like, it's really far and then it will get dark and everything.
On the other hand, the snow was really shit in the couloir, obviously, because the spin rift, made it all hard. But yeah, we decided to, after some thinking and, you know, observing, I think we took at least an hour of really understanding the situation, how big those spin rift phases become, and if we can still manage it in a way that we can go sort of from safe spot to safe spot to safe spot and take a decision progressively. Like, don't decide now to go all the way up, but decide now to go to the next safe spot and to the next safe spot and just keep observing the situation. And that's what we did. And I think that was the right decision.
Yeah, we really went step by step and not like having this idea in mind, we need to go up to the BV now, but yeah, let's go up here to this safe spot, check the situation again, let's keep on going. And as we expected, the spindrift got way less after we went up, because a lot of spindrift already entered the couloir very low. So we passed these points. And then I think when it got more narrow, there is this narrow part of the couloir, it was super chilled, actually. The situation was really nice. We were a bit late, the sun was already going down. And then we came into this last bowl. There was no more spindrift at all. There was also no wind because we were like super hard in the lee side. The thing was that we saw the big cornice at the exit of the bowl. So pretty much on top, there was a big cornice, which obviously looked super small from the valley. And we were like, that's like a little easy cornice. But then when we entered the bowl, we really saw that it's really big. And I started to fear that we might not getting out of our line. And I remember David was really tired and he also felt the altitude a lot. So we took his skis and his camera stuff.
And
so
his backpack.
And his backpack. Like he pretty much didn't have any weight. And we had like all David weights on our backpack. So we were pretty tired and we had heavy backpack. So Mario was leading the way and he climbed straight to the cornice. And when he was at the cornice, you really understood the dimensions when you saw Mario as a tiny little person standing below this huge cornice. And yeah, I think also Mario was a little bit unsure what to do now.
Yeah. Because I remember he radioed down. He was like, boys, like, honestly, I don't see a way out there. And we were like, no, Mario, it's going to be good. And also, like, the thing is, the couloir, I think it has like a consistent steepness of justly above 50 degrees, maybe like 53, 54, when it goes up. And then when you come into this bowl, which is also the most, I'd say, avalanche prone and dangerous spot, it's all the way on top. Yeah. And if something would go there, you would just go down the 1,000 meters with the avalanche, like no chance you're going to stop. Yeah. So already that, you know, and then it just steepens up towards the cornice. And there it goes towards 60, 65. And then you're just standing below the cornice where it's obviously...
It seems vertical.
It is like there, obviously, where the cornice is, it's vertical / overhanging. So it just really gradually steepens up from 53 degrees to vertical.
Yeah, so basically we came up to the cornice. Mario was standing there. David was a little bit behind. And nobody wanted to touch the cornice because it was just hanging above our heads. And I mean, you cannot climb it. You would have to dig through and everyone was super scared. Like if the cornice breaks down, we are all deaf. So yeah, that was pretty an intense situation. It was getting dark, like everything. There was a lot of wind. Then everything was blowing around. The cornice was above our head. We didn't know how to manage the situation. And then I think someone had the idea to traverse out to the left because the cornice looked way smaller there. But still, we were super scared that it's going to break off. And then we put out the rope.
Yeah, we made like a little anchor. Made an anchor with the skis. And I think Mario went there to put me on belay.
Yeah,
and I left the backpack down, so I was like light and nothing like pulling back because it was still like, as we said, overhanging and not super high, but like 2-3 meters and not hard snow, so really impossible to climb. So yeah, I started like going full beast mode and just like hammering into this cornice like bam, 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 bam. You know, it was already dark by then.
Yeah.
We were so close to the bivvy, like we were just... Yeah, at the couloir.
Like 100 meters.
Yeah, looking straight up to the bivvy, which seemed so close, but we were still so far. So yeah, I was on belay because it was also insanely steep. If I would have slipped, I would have never stopped.
Yeah, you would just...
It was on a steady rope and everything, but just, you know, if something breaks or it probably would have helped a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, so but at the end, you made it through. And we all followed. It took a long time to bring up the backpacks and the gear because it was pretty hard to climb with a fully loaded backpack because it was still like almost vertical. And as you said, this was soft snow. You couldn't really put in the ice axes and it was kind of tricky. So it got dark and we were all super tired and exhausted. We went up to the bivvy and then finally everything was good. Mario was...
There was this one moment.
Yeah.
Where we fought.
There was one moment. I went up. Mario was already there in front of the door. And I saw him like trying to open the door. And it didn't open. And for 1 second, I thought like, fuck, somehow it's closed.
But that is always, when you get to a bivvy and you're like super on the edge already and you really, really need to get in there. You get this thought of what if it doesn't open or winter room or something, you know.
Yeah.
It's always this.
That's a classic. But yeah.
obviously it opened.
Yeah.
That was so good. David, I think, for David, it was super, he was super tired because I think... a big thing. First of all, he didn't have the snow blades for the start of it. We only had three pairs. True. Then I gave him mine. And still, if you have them, or generally bootpacking, if you don't do it a lot, you save an insane amount of energy just with technique on how, like, you know, like when you step and you press at the same time with your hands, you're not going to break that deep in.
Yeah.
Or if you attach your knees to the snow and, you know, don't stay upright, but like really put like 50% of your weight on your knees, 50% on your plates, and yeah, a little bit on the hands. So you just really split it up. It makes just such a huge difference. And he didn't have so much experience with that. So I remember when, like, we were all super happy to be at the Bibi, but I remember David was...
He was almost crying at the top. And that was quite an emotional moment, I think, for all of us.
I was stoked for all of us, but I was so stoked for David that he made it. And that was amazing. Super.
So yeah, then we had a good night up there. We didn't sleep that much, but at the end it was better than I expected. I slept kind of okay.
Yeah, me too. And I really enjoyed it up there. Like, I went out in the evening again in the dark and just looking at the stars and the wind, and everything was rough, you know, but I still knew I have like this safe spot in there where I can go into my sleeping bag. I was just standing out there and looking at the stars. It was,
yeah,
oh my God, like so intense.
Yeah, it was really intense. And yeah, then next morning, we never had a look at the face we wanted to ride.
No, because it was dark.
It was dark when we came.
And we also didn't knew, like, we were just hoping that hopefully the face wouldn't have gotten that much spin drift.
Yeah.
Because the couloir, to ride the couloir would have not been fun. Like, it would have been just
steep. I mean, somehow you make your way down, but it's not fun at all. You should not fall. Like, you should definitely not fall. And also the face, if the face would have been hardbacked, I think I would not have ridden it. Because it's a huge no fall zone, and we didn't hike it up, and maybe there is ice, maybe, I don't know. So next morning was kind of intense situation. We went out of the bivvy and had our first look in the face, and it was impressive.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of a rollover at the end, so you
at the end, see yeah, the really end. Fair thing about it that it's. Is that it starts super steep again, I think over 60 degrees at the start after the first cornice, and then it comes back to this like just over 50 degrees. So you could, like, we could see down quite far, which is amazing. You know, imagine having this face as a rollover.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, you would just look down.
But then at the end, you cannot see anymore, and you know there is a no-fall zone below. So I think our idea was to be really 100% sure. I mean, you can now never be 100% sure, but at least very sure that the face is not going to break. And so we brought a 60 meter rope. Is that right? We brought a 60 meter rope to go into the line and make a compression test and to really check the layers. And I remember I went in first. I did a boot cut through the face. And also, like, trying to feel a little bit the consistency of the snow and the situation, and maybe it would have already broken if it would have been unstable. Then I made like a really fast compression test, which was like not like you make it, but just to see the layers a little bit. And then we weren't sure because there was a clean break, I guess. And then you went down because
some facet crystals.
Yeah, there wasn't. Yeah.
I think the snow, I wasn't down there, you know, I was just repelling from you, or like belaying you from the top. And you said it's pretty good, but also for me, I think I was like standing up there and it's such a big face.
Then I don't want to take this decision alone. Matthias should go down as well and make also a compression test, maybe a little bit lower, so that we really have like two opinions with the full information, with everything. And so Matthias went down, he did all the compression tests, and I think it broke at 28, 22.
I went down a little bit on a different position, and the snow was feeling already like sort of, you know, old and settled, which is nice. And then I think I did a proper extended column test.
Yeah.
Actually two. I made one, like proper 90 per 30 centimeters with the two probes, and cut it through and everything, like just as you make it. And I started like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And I think it was a ECT 24. So there was a break at 24, but it didn't progress,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is amazing. And I kept, yeah. and I kept, after it broke, I obviously kept going and it never progressed. So yeah. I did that one. I was like, oh, yeah, that is like really, you know, 24 when it progresses could have been still like a tricky decision to take.
I mean, usually I always heard from mountain guides and everyone that after like 17, even if it progresses, it's kind of safe. But in our situation, there was a no-fall zone. The face was very long and we couldn't knew maybe the layers would have been weaker, lower down. So,
or the weak layer closer to the surface, yeah, or exactly. something.
So for me, the decision or the thing was really to not ride the face if there is some kind of progress. Doesn't matter how many claps you do, but it really shouldn't progress. And that at the end, it was like that. Like it didn't progress. And for me, that was a really good point to say, okay.
It breaks, but the things which you need for an avalanche are not really there. Yeah. And I think I did another one just at the side of it where there was a slightly different snow situation. And again, it was ECT 23, I guess, so one less, but it broke, but it didn't progress.
Yeah. In my opinion, if it doesn't progress, then there is not a base for an avalanche.
Like not really, you know.
Not like, really.
Like you're never 100%.
To have an avalanche, it needs to progress.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just the stuff sliding below which you put down, but it's not really progressing. It's not breaking behind you. It's not breaking left and right of you. So like the progress thing was really important for me. And I think then we decided to ride the face. I mean, 24 without the progress is, for me, it's really good.
It's a good result. Yeah,
it's a good result.
And I think the decision was okay. Also saying that, like we do quite a lot of column tests, especially when we ride faces like this. I think we most of the time also bring a longer rope, in order to make it in a safe way. And if we don't do a column test, at least we do a ski cut on the rope or a boot cut or something. And yeah, I think this time it really paid off. I don't think without a column test, I'm not sure if I would have skied the face, you know. Like
probably
the wind, it was obviously blown in because the wind came from the other side and everything.
It was blown in, and I mean the face is just so scary up there. It's just
I don't know, it gives you to me. It's obviously scary because it starts insanely steep and then it's so long and you see down all the way to the glaciers and the crevasses and everything. But you don't see the cliffs, you don't see the no-fall zone, which sort of gives me a little bit of a false safety feeling, which on some hand it's also nice. But you don't see.
If there is really good conditions in the face, if you would fall, I think you could self-arrest. But
it depends on how much slough that goes down.
Yeah, obviously, if you got taken by the slough, then you're fucked. But still, the thing is, if there is powder, you go really fast. And then if you hit ice or some hard layers, you catch an edge and there is all ice then on the lower part of the face,
done.
Which can be, then you're just dead. Yeah. Like, then it's over. So also, when I was standing at the top, the snow was... It was not perfect to ride fast. Like it was soft, but sometimes there was a crust. Yeah. And a crust where you can really catch an edge. And so my dream is to ride this face really fast, to really shred it down and then escape the slough at the exit and everything.
Play with the white dragon.
Play with the white dragon, but...
It's so hard to
get. It was not in condition... I mean, it was in condition to ride it for sure, but it was not in condition to race it. And I felt a bit sad about it because it was my dream and it's still my dream. I still want to ride it really fast. But this day, I think the right decision was really to ride it nicely, to ride it smooth and everything. But you couldn't race the slough.
We did race the slough, but then at the middle, we let it pass.
Yeah, yeah.
So like but the I mean, first, you know, we couldn't like send it fully. For me, the hardest thing really was, it was like soft snow, but on some parts it really had such a bad density that you really broke in quite deep, like 30 centimeters deep. But then again, it started to become really dense and your ski was not floating.
Yeah.
So it was really a really tricky snow to ski.
As you said, on these parts where you sank in that much, there was also an option to hit some sharks.
Yeah. I hit a shark.
You hit a shark?
And I hit a shark the year before. They're actually like a huge base shot, you know?
Yeah.
So on the same spot, yeah, I hit the shark this year again. It's insane.
And maybe you passed at the same one. So the thing is, if you go like really fast, and then you hit the shark spot, you will start tomahawking. And even if there is powder, I'm not sure if that's gonna be good. So yeah, the situation up there was, okay, take it easy. It was amazing, sunrise, everything, but we couldn't race it. Then we did like rock, paper, scissors, I remember, and I won. Yeah. So I was dropping in first. And I remember I wanted to be as safe as possible, so I dropped in. And I went like, I jumped straight over the compression test hole just to like be sure that at least in the first 50 meters, I'm going to be on the safe spot for sure, because we did the compression test. It's also on video. I can jump over the hole.
I didn't saw that.
And so I made my way down. I never rode the face. I also took it a little bit easy to understand where
navigation,
to go, to not miss my exit, because there is actually only one exit, which is like 3 meters wide.
It's a little super couloir. Super steep and narrow couloir,
if you take the wrong exit, it just finishes off in cliffs, and then there's a slough coming behind and maybe you get over, I don't know. But at the end, like riding the face was kind of a steep skiing experience. It was nice, it was smooth, it was beautiful. But I think I stopped one time and I didn't go that fast. And
I mean, the exit couloir was super icy.
There
would have been like, at least for me with my skill set, I don't know, there might be people out there which can do it, but impossible to race the slough top to bottom.
True.
You get on that icy
stuff. It would have been super dangerous actually. If you would have raced the slough, then everything would have gone well. The snow were good. And then at the exit couloir, which is still in a no-fall zone, because below there are these cliffs, it would have fallen.
Yeah.
Because it was icy.
Yeah. Maybe you could have, maybe somebody could hold it together, but not me.
So next time, at least for me, when I'm going to ride this face and I want to race the slough, I'm going to hike up the line, which we skied, just to know. It's kind of tricky. Some parts are maybe more dangerous, but others are maybe less dangerous. But we already had some discussions about this plan. But for me, that's the only way to be able to ride this face really fast, because it has so many different spots, situations. It has this couloir. It has different aspects, because there is a lot of bowls. So you can never be sure that it's going to be good. Mm-hmm. And if you fall or if you hit some unexpected ice or stuff like that, it's just.
The thing is, like, from a riding perspective, that is, for me, the only way to ski it really fast in sort of a safe way, or a way where there is not going to be too much unexpected stuff, or not too much space for unexpected situations.
Yeah.
But the way up, you know, like going up this huge face and not having, because there you really lose your chance of coming from the top with the rope, doing compression tests and stuff. Sure, you can choose a smart line to get up there, but you're always above that huge exposure. And the fact is that you are going to cross some huge, steep faces where you don't really know. So I think, it's the right, but that's really what I want to do. You know, that's the whole point of it. I want to ski this face really fast and just ski it as I dream about it. But yeah, it's a problem.
It's a problem. But yeah, I think step by step, taking it easy. And at the end, the discussion about you don't have the possibility to enter with a rope and do a compression test, that's true. But very often, the avalanche breaks not when you hike up, but when you drop in, or when you do like big turns, or you put a lot of pressure, because obviously you make way more pressure when you ride down.
The thing is, like, the textbook opinion is a little bit different. Like, I heard from many mountain guides that you have more impact bootbacking than skiing.
Which, no, skinning. Skinning.
Ah, yeah.
You have more impact bootbacking than skinning, but I'm pretty sure you have way more impact.
I mean, it depends on how you ski, but
if you straight line, then for sure you have pretty much no impact.
If you're really smooth and, you know, don't go slow and whatever, maybe it's you. At least you penetrate less deep. That's for sure. Because bootbacking, you penetrate quite deep, and obviously you could hit the weak layer. But saying that, the few avalanches we have released all broke skiing. And I remember once in Oxehöget, on the way up, we saw that there is a weak layer, but it was all good. And then on the way down, second turn, boom, the whole couloir slipped out.
Yeah. And I think that's also what happened more times to us.
Yeah.
Like, never with the big avalanche, but very often with like little wind slaps where we hiked up and then we dropped in and then it broke. So
same for Thomas Couloir, you remember? We bootbacked up Thomas Couloir, and that was actually, it's in Norway, like one of a really big couloir to access some of the most amazing mountains, Thomas Dinden and everything, up in Lyngen. We started skinning up and it was all good. And then we started bootbacking, and pretty much at the middle of the couloir, we were like, well, this snow is not good anymore. But we were already in the middle of the couloir. So we didn't really had, like, turning around would have been bad as well. So we said, okay, let's just choose a very smart line to get up there.
Yeah. You know what the thing is? If you stand like in the middle of the couloir, below you there is a lot of like a big field. Above you there is a big field. And you understand that the layers are not good anymore.
Then you have a problem.
You have a big problem because, okay, turning around, like everyone would say, yeah, just turn around. But, okay. So you stay there, you put on your skis, you start in the middle of the face skiing without any speed.
No.
That's kind of like, I don't really like that that idea to, okay, you could boot back down, but that's like the biggest shit show ever, you know?
You could boot back down. There is many excuses you make up in your head to find a good excuse to keep going, but it is a bad situation. And that's also the thing, if you would hike up to the bivvy through the face, like, that is my biggest fear, that you go up there and suddenly you realize, damn, that's not good anymore, you know?
Yeah, but in that situation, when it's really a no-fall zone, you can really boot back down.
Yeah, you will for sure. But the thing is, like, just to wrap this Thomas Couloir up, we went up to the glacier plateau. And Antti Auti, Finnish snowboarder, right?
Yeah, I think he's from Finland. Yeah.
He spends the winters up there all the time. He came up later and he skied Thomas Couloir.
He went up and he also understood that the layers weren't good. So he turned around. That's what I know. Maybe it's different. But and then he rode it and then it broke.
The whole thing, you know, like, insane avalanche. Luckily, he managed to escape and everything. Yeah. It's all good. But there, like, our gut feeling was right, you know. And
it's always tricky to make those decisions, because maybe if you go farther up, as we did, we could have also hidden a more weaker spot and everything would have gone down. But I'm the opinion that it's not always better to turn around and ski the face. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I think it's better to just try to make the safest line up and just go up there.
Especially if you are planning on skiing something else. You know?
Something else. Yeah, obviously. If you plan to ski the face, if you see a good chance to enter the face with a lot of speed and, like, kind of straight line it, or I don't know, okay, we can talk about, but for sure then it would be better to turn around. But in our situation, we just took Thomas Kuhler as a access to Dogleg. We skied Dogleg and we skied this little face behind. So yeah, in that situation, I think we made a good call. But yeah, that's the thing also with Hochjoch. Maybe we're going to go back. I would really like to go back maybe in a few weeks when the conditions are on and try to ski it fast.
Like it's on the list and it's going to happen at some point, but it might take time. It's just such a huge and tricky face to catch into conditions, also with those cliffs and spin drift and, you know, stuff coming down from above, that to find this face in good conditions, top to bottom, with the outrun sort of untouched and no avalanche came down before and everything, is really, really hard. And then having the situation where you can happily say, okay, I'm just going to boot back that 1,000 meter thing above exposure is, it's a live dream, and I'm sure it will come our ways,
maybe it's this year, maybe it's in the next years. We will see. There are a lot of different options to ski that late. Now we have middle of April. I think till end of May, it's possible to ski that line. If there is a period which is a little bit colder and maybe some fresh snow and stuff like that. But I'm also the opinion that you should not force this phase. You should not risk too much on this phase. For sure, you're going to take some risk if you want to ski it. No. That's just a fact. But I think, yeah, it's wrong to be like, I need to ski this phase this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that's a good point to wrap it up. We want to ski this phase really fast and the way it should be skied. But it might take time. And the most important thing is to stay safe out there and don't play too much with the risk.
Yeah, we will see what happens. And yeah, I think that was it for today. We had a nice talk about some different aspects of ski mountaineering, riding big faces, cornices, ropes, compression tests. And see you in the next episode.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
See ya.